Good morning to everyone. We will begin with introductions from the court. I am Mike Hevekin, the Chief Justice, and now by order of seniority as to service on the court, the other members of the court will introduce themselves.
Good morning, I'm Lindsay Miller-Lerman.
William Castle, good morning.
Stephanie Stacy, good morning.
Good morning, I am Jeff Funk.
Jonathan Papik, good morning.
And John Friedenberg.
Thank you, members of the court. Our first case of the day is In Re Interest of Jesselina M. And we have Mr. Rosen, good morning to you here in person. And on the Zoom this morning, we have Audrey Long, correct?
Good morning. Yes, good morning.
Good morning to you, and also Amber Horn.
Good morning.
And it's my understanding, Ms. Long, you are going to be the only party arguing. Is that correct?
Yes.
Very good. Do either counsel have any questions before we begin?
No.
Then, Mr. Rosen, you may approach and you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. Justices, may it please the court. My name is Greg Rosen, court appointed to represent appellant Samantha Mestis, who resubmits the arguments set forth in the petition for further review in the appellate brief. And I'd ask to reserve 2 minutes of time, if I may. The issue here is whether the state and the guardian ad litem proved Jesselina was in out-of-home placement for 15 of the most recent 22 months under 43297 subsection 7. The Cheyenne County Court terminated parental rights under 43297 subsections 2, 3, 5, 6, and 7. And under a best interest analysis, the appeals court affirmed only on 43297 subsection 7 and best interest analysis.
At this point in the procedure, on further review, what is your position regarding the status of the findings on the other conditions under the statute?
Thank you, Justice Castle. From the lower court, you mean?
Yeah, I mean, the lower court found multiple grounds for termination. The Court of Appeals focused only on one of them. At this point, where does that place us?
Justice Castle, I would resubmit the arguments I put forth in the appellate brief on all the other statutory grounds. I argued those pretty comprehensively in the appellate brief. And since the appellate court only decided on the one statutory issue, that's the only error we assigned on the petition for further review.
So is it legitimate for us to say, well, it really doesn't matter on subsection 7, pick one of the others?
Well, you do. This court does have a de novo review, but I would argue that because of the clear and convincing evidence standard is so high, and there was a lot of evidence presented on both sides, I would argue that no, those standards weren't met. And the appellate court was right to not decide on those issues.
Okay, I want to shift gears just a little bit.
Okay.
On the subsection 7, it talks about placement out of the home.
Yes.
What is the home? Whose home?
Placement, my understanding is, statutorily, is if out-of-home placement means placement under the guidance of the state in a foster home. So as soon as they're out of that foster home, the out-of-home placement, whether it be with the mom or the dad, that out-of-home placement ends then. And even in day two of the TPR trial, the DHHS caseworker even mentioned and admitted, yes, Jesselina has not been out of home for 15 of the most recent 22 months.
As a statutory matter under sub 7, what do you think out of home was intended by the legislature? To be out of the home of the parent was this at question, or would it include another parent with whom the parent in question is not living?
Again, I would say that Justice Miller-Lerman, that the out of home placement means out of either if the child is out of the parents' homes in foster care, that's when it applies. That's when out of home care starts counting.
From what do you draw that conclusion?
Case law, even statutory, just I can't cite any cases off the top of my head, but the terms out of home care and foster care are often synonymous, used within the same.
There's another section, 43292.021A, pertaining to out of home in foster care.
Yes.
So is this not a correct inference that seven has to do not with foster care, but with parents?
Well, seven, my interpretation is that seven does have to do with foster care as well. If they're in foster care, then it's out of home. If they're out of foster care, it's in home.
So your argument is in seven, out of home means foster care, and in 1A, foster care means foster care.
It's a different statute. And under that same statute, if I may, 40.02, that's the statute that gives discretion on when to file. That's the statute that says you must file termination proceedings under subsection 1.
That's a state's obligation.
State's obligation. But back to the termination statute, it's the legislature telling the court, here's what you decide. You decide after the most recent 22 months, you look back.
Starting on what day?
That's the other issue. And I would argue it's the issue, it's the day that the decision is made.
So you have a petition filed, I'm picking out dates, you know, just hypothetical. But you have a petition filed January 1, or January 2. You have a trial that starts on March 2. You have a trial that concludes on April 2, and you have a decision that's entered on May 2. You're saying it's May 2.
May 2, that's...
What's your statutory construction argument to reach that conclusion?
Justice Castle, if the plain and clear language of subsection 7 says it's the most recent 22 months, it's plain English. You look back 22 months from today, whatever day that is, that's when the court decides. Just like the verdict coming down in a criminal case, or the order coming down in a family law divorce case.
If there's a month lag time from the last date of trial to the date the decision is issued, how does the court know what the last 22 months are? It can't, can it?
Well, as the wise judge sits in his chambers, he'll as he's writing his order, he'll look back 22 months.
And but he or she's not going to have evidence of where the child is in the month interim from the last day of trial to the date the order is entered.
And that's why this case is novel, is because the two cases cited in the appellate opinion, Nicole L. and Shelby, the appellate court cited two cases. In both of those cases, the child remained in out-of-home care before the petition was filed, during the trial, when the verdict order came down. But here, Jesselina was in dad's house, not in out-of-home care throughout that whole procedure. So that's why it's novel.
Do you agree that this 15 out of 22 months has to exist before the state could even allege it in the juvenile petition?
Yes.
And then it's your position, it has to exist the time they assert it, and then that has to continue through all the way through decision.
That's my assertion, yes, Your Honor.
But in this case, it would move, right? It would be one thing at the time the petition is filed, and it would be a different 22 months by the date of the decision.
That's my interpretation, Justice Papik, that it's things can be very true when things are alleged, and then by the time the decision comes down, they're no longer true, and the judge can no longer make that order because it's an error of fact. It's not true anymore.
Well, as to the facts, let's see if we're looking at the same facts. Correct me if I'm wrong. Jeff Lena was removed, pardon me, on September 10th, 2020.
Yes, ma'am.
Right? And she was placed with she was in foster care, not with mom or dad. And then on January 10th, 2022, she was placed with the father, right?
Yes.
So at that point, she had been out of mom's home and dad's home for 16 months.
I would not dispute that.
Okay. How is that relevant? So then if day one is the day of the petition or day two is the day of the decision, would either of those have an impact in case? Forgive the expression, she's clocked in the 16 months now. That's set before the petition and before the decision.
Correct. The 16 months are clocked, but by the time the decision comes down, it's the 22 months preceding that. Most recent is the operative words in that statute. The 22 most recent months. It doesn't say when the petition was filed. It doesn't say when she started foster care. It's just the most recent 22 months. We would argue that the court got it wrong. The appellate court got it wrong. Jesseline was not out of the home for 15 of the most recent 22 months. I see my time's expired. Could I?
You may finish your thoughts.
And I would respectfully ask this court to reverse. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Long, good morning to you again.
Good morning.
You proceed.
Thank you. Justices of the court, I am the court-appointed guardian ad litem for Jesselina. I am arguing on behalf of both the state and the guardian ad litem today. I'll first address one of the questions posed by the court, in that what triggers or what do they mean by out-of-home placement? And I would submit, Your Honor, that it could be anybody, whether it be another parent, foster home, a family, or a friend. And the reason I say that is that the statute for termination is specific to terminating parental rights. Therefore, it has to be a removal from a parent at that point. But it doesn't mean it has to be both parents, simply because you can terminate one parent's parental rights and not the other, by way of, say, a step-parent adoption, for instance. The juvenile code also covers, it says parents, guardians, custodians. So anyone that has physical care of a child can be brought into a juvenile removal proceeding for abuse and neglect. And then it would then trigger at which point do parents, you know, reclaim the child, and then for we don't have the out-of-home placement, et cetera. So the out-of-home placement is where the child is not with a parent. HHS, I would clarify what Mr. Rosen said during the testimony, was that HHS said, we don't consider her out of home any longer once she's placed back with a parent. And at that point, that was in January of 22, she was removed from another parent, essentially both parents, in September of 20, because the father at that time wasn't able to take placement of the child. So it's correct, the 16 months triggered in January of 2022. I think, honestly, this is not a novelty of law with respect to how 15 of 22 is when it becomes ripe, essentially, Your Honors. In that the legislature has created a very specific statute that says once you attain 15 of 22 under chapter 43.292.02 subsection 1A, the petition shall be filed on behalf of the state to terminate parental rights. If the child has been in foster care under the responsibility of the state for 15 or more months of the most recent 22. So that is a triggering event. And so we can't file prior to that. Once we hit that, then we can file. So I would then kind of.
That statute that you're quoting that we talked about earlier with opposing counsel measures foster care. Mm-hmm. It does measure out of home placement. And in fact, in a later subsection of that statute, it makes it clear that placement with a relative and certainly another parent would be a relative is takes away the obligation of the state to file the termination petition. But the statute that we're talking about in terms of the ground for termination, the sub 7, 292 sub 7, doesn't use foster care. The language there is out of home placement. So how do you say at that point whose home, and how do you measure? Why? What's your rationale for measuring from petition in that statute?
Thank you, Justice Castle. As I said at the beginning, the Chapter 43 covers parents, custodians, guardians as it relates to children. So subsection 7 under 43.292 specifically says out-of-home placement. It doesn't necessarily mean that we're going to trigger the 43.292.02 subsection 1A. That is very specific if a child is in foster care versus just out of home, where a private citizen could file for termination of parental rights because the parents essentially have abandoned the children, right? So in this particular case, though, we have to read them both because the state did join this petition. So therefore, they have to be read together. So the out-of-home placement in this particular case is very strict to foster care. And we would then submit that at the time the petition was filed in March of 2022, the 15 out of 22 had been met between September of 20 and January of 22. Honestly, if we need some sort of simple clarification, it can be that the petition can read the subsection 7 is applicable because the child has been in an out-of-home placement 15 of the most recent 22 months as of blank date based upon the removal. And I think that could clear it up. And then we wouldn't necessarily have these arguments. The math that the Court of Appeals used, I don't think is inappropriate. I think it's accurate. It kind of leads me to another argument about, I think it was Justice Papik talked about a moving target, and that would defeat the purpose of this, the legislature saying there's a 15 out of 22 look back period. And if we would have a moving target, it would essentially entice those that are trying to maintain their parental rights to constantly ask for continuances to then defeat that 15 out of 22. So I don't think that's appropriate. I don't think that's what the legislature intends. I don't think this court would want to continue hearing Court of Appeals decisions and appeals from lower courts saying, well, we had a hearing date, it got moved this month, and we got moved this month, and we got moved this month, and therefore we don't think it applies anymore. I think that would defeat the legislative intent on the 15 out of 22. There is a very specific reason that there is the 15 out of 22 is because you can't just file it. One of the arguments mom basically made said is, this would have had to have been filed when the child was in utero. And that makes absolutely no sense because it's not ripe until such time the child has been in and out of home placement for 15 out of the most recent 22 months.
Counsel, the relationship between parent and child is constitutionally protected. How does your reading of the statute, which would in essence deprive the parent of fixing problems during the pendency of between the filing of the petition and we'll say the start of the trial, putting aside date of decision and the end of the trial, just the start, if you use start of the trial, why shouldn't we give the parent whose relationship is constitutionally protected the benefit of improvements that have allowed that child not to be in out-of-home placement during that period of time?
Your Honor, I don't believe that we don't allow them to do that. I mean, even if just because there's a petition filed doesn't mean that the services stop unless there was a specific order from the lower court that said, We are no longer providing reasonable efforts towards you achieving reunification under the case plan. So just because it is.
Aren't you arguing that the sub seven ground start, the clock stops, is counted backwards from the date of filing of the petition?
Yes.
So what happens after the petition doesn't count in your articulation for purposes of sub seven?
No, because if it did, Your Honor, then subsection seven just needs to be eliminated from the legislative code. If we're going to say it was ripe at this point, and then by the time we go to trial, it's no longer ripe, we have to dismiss that, I think that's inappropriate. You know, in other facets of law, we have statutes of limitations, for instance, like a personal injury case. Not my area, but I believe it's you have to file from 2 days of the date of the occurrence or the last date of treatment. There's a very specific reason for that. And so if we were just going to say, well, you have time to make it up just because a petition was filed or the case was filed, by the time we go to trial, you've rehabbed all those issues, then it defeats even having those statute of limitations.
Pardon me. These 15 out of 22 numbers are provided by the legislature. And evidently, the legislature has decided that parents with their constitutional rights should have an opportunity for rehabilitation, improvement, and some so forth, right? For
yes.
A period of 15 months.
Yes.
That's it, kind of. Forget the denominator, right? That's what the legislature has determined. And I think Justice Castle's questions go to maybe, is that constitutional? Is that enough? What do we do with this legislative decision that suggests 15 months is the opportunity for the parents to, improve?
Your Honors, I would respond to that to say, first of all, that's not an issue before this court today. That was not complained of by the appellant in this case, that it's been unconstitutional. However, that issue has been raised in prior cases, and this court has found that the 15 out of the 15 months is a reasonable time frame in which a parent to improve their parenting skills to reunify with their child. Because the other end is that a child deserves permanency, and we can't just sit back and wait and wait and wait for parental maturity. And that's been noted in In Re Sunshine and In Re Katrina. So with that, Your Honor, I see I am out of time unless there's any other questions.
There you go, ma'am. I have one more question. Would the required best interest of the child analysis adequately protect the constitutional right that Justice Castle spoke of?
Yes, Your Honors. I was trying to get to that and I ran out of time. I believe 100% that's the reason we have that extra measure in there to help protect those.
So apropos Justice Frydenberg's question, if the 1522 is, we may have said, is mechanical, that does not determine the outcome, right? The outcome proceeds to best interest and fitness. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honors. May I finish that question, so, even though I am out of time?
That or something like that in Kendra?
I am so sorry, Your Honor. I talked over you. What did you say?
Oh, we have a case called In Re Interest of Kendra. Did we say something like I was paraphrasing in Kendra? You do the math, but that's not determinative of the outcome with respect to the particular child.
Yes, Your Honors. The reason for that is the case you got, the courts in all the cases underneath that have simply said, if you meet this first factor, however, you've got to balance that with best interests. And then there's been case law designed to describe what is in the child's best interest, and do we then say that issue has been rehabbed enough, that they are unfit or they are fit to then not have that triggering event. So yes, best interests is the catch, is the check for that triggering 15 out of 22 to protect the constitutional safeguards of being able to raise your child.
Counsel, Ms. Long, I believe that concludes your time and argument. Counsel, we appreciate both of your contributions to this issue with your arguments. And Ms. Long, I
just want to make one note. You made a reference to you guys toward the end of your argument, and we would appreciate that you not refer to the court as you guys. With that, counsel, arguments are concluded, and you all are excused.
Thank you, Your Honor.